I don't like this business of preaching to fans.
Calm down, Greg. It's soccer. It's soccer.
You know anything else about soccer?
Not much. All I know is I got a lot of balls.
You know, it doesn't matter if you're in the stadium watching a game on TV. It's just the guy's not good enough. The guy is just not good enough.
Simon, I don't know if you're big into New Year's resolutions, but, you know, wondering if maybe you pledged to come out of your shell a little bit in 2015.
Kind of pisses me off, to be honest.
That's why he's here!
Extra Time Radio here in New York. David Goss alongside Simon Borg. And Ben the Research Bear is in the house.
What's with the name? Why can't he just be Ben Bear? And by the way, you started the show saying, this is going to be my intro, just coming out with Extra Time Radio.
Because everyone knows where you are right now. Everyone knows where they are. Because he's Ben the Research Bear, because no one. I don't want people to confuse him with Will Bruin the Dancing Bear.
Do we think bears actually do any research? Like,
as animals?
Yeah. What do you think? They go looking for salmon. They go.
Yeah. Do you think they research? Or I just think they do everything on instinct.
Like, following the salmon upstream, like. So much research in
all right. Off to a flying start. Ariel Castillo will join us later. Special guests on this show, Loaded Show, CJ Sapong, and Connor O'Brien, who American Abroad fans will know that name, played in Denmark, played in Austria, looking for a contract right now. We sat down with him earlier today.
In studio.
So we're going to have that soon. But first, don't forget MLSstore.com for all of your new Atlanta gear. We're going to give a little bit away in the mailbag to some people who entertained me, at least, through their emails. Let's talk about the weekend. Incredible weekend.
Do they have
MLS.
To be Atlanta fans?
No, and they didn't have to talk about Atlanta.
These are collector items, right?
These are phenomenal, and they're also
first items in Atlanta United FC history.
Yeah, they're good stuff. Let's get to the weekend, though, Ben. I'm sure you went to the NYCFC Toronto game as a season ticket holder.
I am a season ticket holder.
Exposed.
But I had to attend my baby niece's one-year-old birthday party. So I couldn't make it to the Bronx.
Hold on, are you a spiritual like godfather or
no? Just normal family and gathering.
Did your 1-year-old niece demand that you be there?
Oh, she was calling me up every couple of days, just making sure I was going to show up. So I had to do it. I had to miss Javinko, which not the greatest.
Would you have missed that?
Hold on, he's an NYCFC season ticket holder, and he just said I had to miss Javinko.
He's an MLS lover. He's the research bear. He just loves his statistical.
MLS super fan.
And he loves anyone who's efficient. And look at Javinko's shots on goal.
You missed the single best game in MLS history. A lot of people point to that David Beckham, Juan Pablo Angel game.
Oh, yeah.
I was at that game.
You were at that game?
I was at that game.
Well, if you were at Yankee Stadium this weekend, you would have known that this game was better.
You're comfortable putting your stamp down as the greatest game in Major League Soccer history.
Yes.
Wow.
It's not just because it finished 4-4.
And it wasn't because of the quality of the defending that you're saying that.
Definitely not.
Right. But it's the twists and turns in that game. New York City FC up 2-0, and then one man, single-handedly, Sebastian Giovinco, coming back.
How do you say atomic ant in Italian?
What is it in Italian?
Atomico, I forgot.
No, you're the one who speaks Italian.
Yeah, I just off the top of my head, you caught me cold. It was a fantastic, I can't think of many individual performances by one player in MLS more dominant.
But doesn't make it the best game. I think you're forgetting there was that Portland Seattle 4-4 game last year.
Clint Dempsey.
Portland was up and then the Sounders came back.
No, but this also the quality of the that Giovinco brought to the table. It was just special. It was just so special. And by the way, there was a moment in this game, the moment I'll remember aside from the Giovinco goal, that chip that was just magnificent. There was a point, I think it was on that goal, where Justin Morrow comes over and kisses Giovinco on the cheek. And you don't usually see that, but I think that's what everyone wanted to do right then. They wanted to go through their TV sets and kiss Giovinco on the cheek. It was such a great game.
It was Giovinco.
We should all say thank you right now.
It was Giovinco via mano a mano throughout that game. It was national TV, big performance.
Giovinco could have had five, six goals.
Yeah.
He had two posts.
Hit.
I did watch it later on Watch ESPN, so I got it in. Don't worry.
But why wouldn't you say it's the greatest game of all time? Why wouldn't it
because,
qualify?
Because it happened yesterday, so that's the one that's fresh in your mind. You got to think back.
I think also when you say the greatest game of all time, there's a lot of different ways to look at that, and maybe someone would say a matchup between two teams that were poised for something great, like the Clasico when San Jose was the top team in the Supporters Shield, and it was a great LA team.
That was the greatest finish of all time.
But that was 2013. 2012 was like I think the last goal was in the 61st minute by Wando.
And people will
three,
but
and
people will say,
no, I'm talking about the Gordon goal, the Gordon one that gives me goosebumps every time I hear it.
That, well, San Jose wasn't that good.
That's the greatest
San Jose
finish.
Didn't,
but
didn't
this
make the playoffs that year
from beginning to
but
end.
But it wasn't. But it was exciting. It was fun. But
it started
wasn't
off slowly. It started off slowly. But what do you mean it wasn't quality? I mean,
as a defender, if you concede multiple PKs.
Think a little bit about what you're saying.
That's not because but the PKs were not because they were sucked in by great offensive plays.
You're wrong.
Watson Cirbo just barreled over Lovitz for no reason.
Ball
absolutely
by
not.
The
ball was out of bounds on that play.
Out of bounds? It was in the box.
The first one, Mehdi Bellucci's barely even touching the
guy.
That
was a penalty.
Okay, maybe, but like it wasn't because of greatness. It was because of mistakes.
Yes.
And I'm not saying it's not a good game or an exciting game.
Do you
game.
Realize what you're saying? That if you had perfection all the way through, you would have stalemates. Like literally.
That's what Fabio Cannavaro says. I don't know.
During play, it would be stalemates. You would see nothing happening in a game.
That would not be fun.
Well, let's see. Let us know what you think about this. Tweet at us, at Extra Time Radio. Email us. Because let's move on to a little bit more history in this one. Frank Lampard didn't play in this game. Jason Christ says today that he's hoping he will be able to play at Gillette Stadium next week. The New England Revolution, a part of a little piece of history, Ben. Not on the positive side, though.
It was not a good Saturday night for them. They gave up 3 goals in the first 12 minutes, which is the fastest any team has ever reached 3 goals. So the Red Bulls
in MLS history.
In MLS history. So, I mean, we saw
from the start of a game.
From the start of the game. I mean, we've seen 3 goals in a shorter time span, but that was not to start the game. They beat FC Dallas back in 2006 scored 3 goals in 16 minutes.
Who's they?
Game. FC Dallas.
FC Dallas.
Yeah.
So the New York Red Bulls back on top maybe? I mean, was it a blip and now this is the team that they are? Or is it that New England's going through a tough time without Jermaine Jones and New York was just able to take advantage?
I have never wavered. The New York Red Bulls are the best team in MLS. I don't care what power rankings say. I don't care what pundits say. The New York Red Bulls, and I've watched a ton of games, a ton.
You've been at games.
They are the best team in Major League Soccer.
There is one thing that might disagree with that, and that would be the points per game. Now, Ben Bear has been scolding me for about a week now. This last week on this show, I said that SKC has struggled at times throughout this season, but it turns out
you specifically said that they were fighting for a playoff spot.
Which they, in one way, they are because they currently sit in sixth place. But Ben, explain to us why Sporting KC is the best team in MLS.
They have the highest points per game. It's pretty simple, and they had the highest points per game last week too. But they sit in sixth just because they have not played as many games
so,
as other teams.
So Sporting KC knocking off Vancouver on the road Sunday night. 9 p.m. Eastern time, the last game of the weekend, a 1-0 win. Kevin Ellis with the goal to get that victory. Now, you picked them to win Supporters Shield, Simon,
yes,
at the beginning of the year. So I'm pretty sure you're going to be on board with him and what he's saying that, besides what you just said about the Red Bulls.
It's not on board. These are facts. They have the highest points per game.
He likes the facts. Highest points per game. I go by what I've seen with my naked eye. My eyes are naked.
Yeah, they're just
non-stop,
so exposed.
And that the Red Bulls play the greatest, to me, style and are the most effective team as well with their style. And the games they have not succeeded, they've not gotten results in, it's not because they've played poorly. Maybe there were 4 halves this year where they haven't played well with the same energy and desire and passing. But the formation works. The players fit in the formation. They know what they're doing.
A specific amount of players. I mean, these guys, Dax, Kleshchen, Felipe, BWP, they all play every game. Do we not think they're going to get tired at some point? Do they need reinforcements maybe?
And then when you think they do need reinforcements, they bring a guy like Anatole Abang, who fills in for a couple of games. Sal Zizzo's on the bench. You thought he was maybe a starter, and Mike Grella now is the starter.
They're depleted at fullback, and they're continuing to put up results. Let's jump to the other side of the table, though. So we're going from top to bottom. And Rocky Mountain Cup this weekend, big game, even for these teams when they're struggling. RSL takes a 79th-minute lead, and then Colorado gets a 3-1 victory. 2 goals in extra time.
Thanks to Sebastian Jaime.
Stoppage time, not extra time.
Sorry, excuse me. Stoppage time.
Don't get carried away with the show.
Sebastian Jaime.
Extra time.
Sebastian Jaime. 7th red card of the season for RSL, which I do believe ties their season high in club history, and we're not even halfway through the season. What is going on right now in RSL?
They didn't play well. I mean, they were outplayed by Colorado, so the result in the end was just. They had one good chance in the first half, but they just are not. It's almost like they go on the road, and they have this defensive mindset about them where they just don't express themselves, and they just hold back, and they look bad, and they give the other team all the confidence in the world because they have the initiative, and they feel they're doing well. Colorado, as the game went on, they got better and better.
Now, Colorado played well, but Ben, is this they're missing a lot of guys to Gold Cup, or is this a problem for RSL?
I think this is a problem. They were playing like this before Beckerman and Raimondo left, and it's not getting any better there.
Yep.
I mean, they're still trying to figure out this new formation. But, you know, Luis Gil completely falls asleep and lets Charles Olundu get by him for the game-winning goal.
I just think the team looks like they're in an identity crisis. You look at the players, they're not – they don't have that swagger about them that the old RSL
and
had.
And they talked about after this game, that killer instinct. Tony Beltran specifically mentioned, we were up and we didn't know how to put the game away. And that's something you don't normally hear from guys who play Javi Morales and, you know, Raimondo's not there, but Beltran, guys who have been in the league for a really long time, who understand this league. They have an opportunity Tuesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern time, U.S. Open Cup against the LA Galaxy to try and bounce back quickly. We've seen for Philadelphia, who struggled at times this year, that the U.S. Open Cup can be a little bit of a silver lining to maybe help
Pick
your team
feel
better. Philadelphia gets a 3-0 victory over Portland over the weekend, and he didn't score this week, but CJ Sapong, a major part of what's been going right for this Philadelphia team. Let's talk to him right now. CJ, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me.
CJ, you guys beat the Timbers 3-0 over the weekend. Really good win. Really good play from your group. My lasting memory of the game, though, is probably going to be the Sons of Ben mimicking the Timbers Army and Timber Joey using the Chester chainsaw to slice bread. So instead of log slabs, they celebrated with the bread. Did you notice any of the guys in the locker room walking in with slices of bread after the game?
Oh, man, I think they kind of scarfed them down before we even got in the locker room. I don't know if they all the way in, but that's so creative. That's so creative. I've been fortunate enough playing in Kansas City and then coming to Philadelphia. You know, I've had two cities with just amazing fan bases. And the creativity and the loyalty that they bring, you know, game in, game out, is something that I really admire. And I'm very honored to be a part of it.
Anything else you've seen from the Sons of Ben in your time in Philly that you kind of think of when I mentioned Chainsaw, Chester Chainsaw? Anything else that comes to mind?
Oh, man. There's so many different things. You know, there's an artist who's part of the Sons of Ben. And for every player, he makes a skateboard with their own personal decal, you know, on the bottom of it. And I think that's something that's a testament to their love and the passion for the game.
Early in the year, results weren't going your way. There was a fan protest. It kind of felt like it was going to be maybe a little gloomy. Did it feel like it was just going to be one of those years for a little while?
You know, I never really got too down. If one thing my first season in Kansas City taught me was to never get too down and, you know, at the same, never get too hot. I could feel that, you know, the energy was, you know, not where it needed to be. And it was definitely one that was kind of infecting everybody. But I think I can only use my experience in Kansas City because that's the only other team I play for. But, you know, those were things that I have felt before. And, you know, whether it was on the field or off the field with life, you know, something that I kind of pride myself on is, you know, recognizing that there are ebbs and flows in everything. And that, you know, the light will shine through at some point. I think it's just about, you know, the response you make, no matter what the situation that comes forth.
Now, CJ, the team's turnaround has, in a lot of ways, coincided with your return after dealing with that DUI and everything that came after that, all well documented. Do you think it's something more than a coincidence?
Man, nothing in life is coincidence. And if, you know, I've learned so much from that, and I could, you know, talk to you guys for hours about all the different things that I've learned, but kind of goes back to what I just said before. It's like there's ebbs and flows in everything, and it takes mistakes. It takes dark times for, you know, you as an individual, organization, team, whatever, to self-reflect and, you know, start to assess
who you are and what your goals are, and what, you know, what kind of legacy or lasting effect you want to leave on your, you know, people around you. And it just so happened that, you know, with my situation, it came, you know, came at a very bad time for us. And, you know, fortunate enough, coming back, I came back with, you know, a new sense of, how would you say, a new sense of who I was. And it coincided with the team doing a lot better. And I think my teammates kind of saw the new me, and they saw how, you know, I kind of had a new sense of calm with everything that I did. And, you know, I don't want to, I'm not going to take all the credit in any way, shape, or form, but you know, it just takes that little glimmer of light, you know, for somebody else to see, and, you know, for it to basically be disseminated throughout the whole team.
Now, CJ, to the extent you feel comfortable sharing, I think a lot of our fans might be interested to know what the as you mentioned, the dark days were like for you. We all have them. How did you experience that particular period?
Well, I'll tell you, I've actually grown in the last couple of seasons, whether it's, you know, being on a high and playing a lot and getting the championship, or being on a low and, you know, injury and being on the bench. So before this situation, I had gotten to a point where I knew, or I had my own understanding of, you know, situations transpiring and it being totally about the response, you know. And so that's the first thing that I try to stay true to is, you know, you hear everybody's talking, and, you know, you hear maybe people that are cheering for you, now you hear them not cheering for you, you know, or whatever it may be. And I just try to stay true to responding in the best way possible. And not to say that that's always going to make it, you know, peachy keen, but throughout the days, and, you know, I went into the treatment program with the league, and, you know, being unplugged from, you know, the situation really helps a lot. And I think that's something that we as players probably don't get enough of, you know, it's an opportunity to detach ourselves from the everyday chatter and noise, you know, our profession and everything that comes with it. The dark days made the better days that much better, you know. So looking back on it, I have no regrets. You know, if the season started and everything was cool, like, yeah, obviously you want to say, like, yeah, that's what you want. But when you go through the tough times and then you see the light, it really makes you appreciate those sun rays a little bit more.
Now, CJ, maybe I'm prying a little too much here, but I notice in the first part of this interview, you're mentioning talking a lot about maintaining the even keel. Do you do that? It's an emotional state, I guess, you know, containing your emotions. Do you get there by yourself? Do you have, I don't know, sports psychologists that help you? Do you do it through religion? How do you get there?
Well, the first thing I think is finding multiple channels to happiness. A lot of players in the league, we grow up being taught that soccer is the only way that you're going to be happy. Success in soccer determines who you are as a person. I think we, you know, sometimes you got to put your pride aside, and yes, if you need to speak to a therapist, go and do that. If you need to talk to a teammate, go and do that. It's tough in our profession to lay your emotions out there for other people to see. But at the end of the day, I think for me, that's what helps, was finally being able to, you know, stop restricting myself, because that's usually what it is. We construct our own barriers on ourselves, and that, you know, basically keeps us from expanding outwardly. So I would say it's definitely about trying to find as many different channels to happiness and in a many different modes of expression, if you will.
Now, CJ, on the field, Coach Curtin has said he's seeing a new look in your eyes, a determination. You're talking about a new sense of calm, maybe your teammates seeing a new you. How do you maintain that? How do you keep this up and continue this run throughout the season?
Well, you don't get caught up in those same things that might have, you know, led you to where you were in the first place. I think as much as I am cognizant of who I am, and I try to pay attention to, you know, my emotions and my feelings, it's easy to let the outside dictate how you feel. It's easy to let the outside dictate how you think. You know, and coming out of this, the biggest thing I've learned is you have to be happy within yourself, and you have to know who you are. And when you can go through all the amazing things that you've done, whether it's in life or in your career, and you know that you have those and that they cannot be taken away by a fan tweeting, you know, a hurtful comment, then you truly find your own, and it makes it easier to step on the field and perform at your best because you know you're doing it for yourself.
CJ, I can't help but look at your play and wonder, you know, now that you're being played regularly at center forward, that's where you feel, that's where you're most comfortable. I know you played so many games with Sporting Kansas City out wide, including with Philly, and it just didn't feel like, watching you play, it just didn't feel right. Is the position helping you on the field as well?
Yeah, you know, that's a position that I've grown up playing, and even, you know, my favorite players in the world, you know, play that position, and I've emulated my game, you know, to theirs, so it's my comfort zone, and it's an area of the field where I think I'm most effective. You know, I'm not somebody that's going to, you know, dazzle too much with, you know, trickery and on the ball skills and stuff like that. I just like to be as close to the goal as possible. I like to hold the ball for my team and, you know, pounce on opportunities when they come. And that's one thing I've been very excited about this season is, you know, I have players around me that can put the ball wherever it needs to be. And I've been fortunate enough to be in the right place at the right time and, you know, a couple of my goals. And that's when I feel like I'm doing what I need to be doing.
CJ, a large part of your game is your physicality and your ability to battle with center backs, opposing center backs. You've been in this league a little while now. You got to have some guy who you just love to go up against, maybe a guy who you get under their skin, someone who you really enjoy that battle.
Well, you know, I realized after last game, I like going up against Nat Borchers. He's somebody that is physical, and me, I think I play better with center backs that are more physical. It keeps me in the game. And I just like that whole game, you know, tussling and jockeying for position and stuff like that. It's not like I look at that matchup as an advantage. I actually look at it as a, you know, opportunity to test myself and see, you know, the limits that I could take myself. You know, he's a guy that, you know, after the game, he's probably the first person I go up to and I, you know, hey, great battle. I have a tremendous amount of respect for him and defenders that I like that. So I thoroughly enjoy those tussles and those physical matchups.
That's good to hear because Simon might be going up in a physical matchup against Nat in the future because they have a little rivalry.
Yeah, Nat wants a piece of me. I don't get what could be up with him. But CJ, the things are going great in Philly, but I imagine it was tough to move from Kansas City. It was a place where, you know, the fans loved you, the club loved you. You were having fun out there, it seemed. What was it like? Was it a little jarring those first few weeks in Philly?
Well, you know, ironically, I finally got to the point where I was ready to make a move that was going to be for the betterment of myself and my career. I could sense that, you know, with Kansas City being so loving and, you know, so top-notch with everything they do, you know, from the organization all the way to the fans, I could see how I got a little comfortable. You know, I wasn't challenging myself as much as I felt like I needed to, and it just so happened maybe 2 weeks before that, I finally kind of came to grips with the idea of leaving Kansas City and, you know, pursuing other options. And, you know, maybe it's coincidence, maybe it's, you know, fate, whatever. But, you know, right after making that kind of conclusion within myself, then I ended up getting traded. So it's interesting how life works. But I'm definitely, looking back, I'm thankful for everything Kansas City did for me and, you know, everything it taught me. It's definitely molded me to be the player, the man I am now. And shoot, I'll never forget that. But life, you know, is about layers, it's about progression. And I think leaving Kansas City was something that would spur, you know, probably the most growth in me. And it has so far.
I heard you had two dogs. You had to move to Philly as well. Was it tougher on them?
Well, yeah, it was one dog at first, and while my dog was being dog sat, she happened to meet a cool little male dog, and they made puppies. So, yeah, it kind of pushed everything back for a while, but when it was all said and done, when you're driving across country and you have these two amazing dogs, you know, in your backseat, it kind of makes it worth it.
So what are you doing with the puppies? You're giving them to teammates, or, like, what's going on with them?
Well, the other puppies are in Kansas City right now. They are all pretty much set and on their way to happy homes. And I have a firstborn puppy in Philadelphia with me. He's terrorizing my place and leaving presents everywhere. You can, you know, you can find him. But it's a beautiful thing.
So you're looking forward to more puppies? Like, was this going to be a constant thing now?
Nah, probably. I think two is where I cap it off at, man. That's a little much. I'm right now, I'm happy and content with just these two.
So, CJ, coming in, last question. This weekend, you guys travel to play in Toronto against a team in TFC that a lot of people see as one of the classes of the Eastern Conference, but you have the opportunity with a win to actually jump them in the standings, which I don't think a lot of people saw coming just a few weeks ago. Do you see Toronto as maybe an opportunity for the Philadelphia Union to show themselves to the league, to prove that maybe you guys should be in the talk for the contention for the Eastern Conference title?
And forget the league. It's for us. This last game is, I think, one of our best performances in the season. And, I mean, simply seeing guys' faces when we're on the field and even beforehand, you sense a different energy, you sense a different air. And I think we're a team that, as you know, the more we come into our own and the more we realize who we are as a team and our strengths and, you know, our weaknesses as well, will definitely be a force to be reckoned with. Toronto is a great team. They are on, you know, a little bit of a run as well, and they have individual players that can hurt you. But I think our team is, we can play with any team when we are confident. And right now we're confident, and it's actually fun being on the field and seeing how we work together, and then also seeing individual players shine through when they're needed. It's a beautiful thing. And I think that will be definitely a force to be reckoned with for the remainder of the season.
CJ and Philadelphia Union will look to continue their role this Saturday, July 18th, 4 p.m. Eastern Time in Toronto. You can watch that on MLS Live in the USA and TSN in Canada. CJ, thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thanks for sharing, CJ. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. You guys have a good one.
Thank you.
Thanks so much to CJ Sapong for taking the time to be with us. And Simon, just being so open. A lot of interesting stuff he had to say.
Really
tweet
deep
at us at Extra Time Radio. Email extratime@mlssoccer.com. Let us know what you think about that. One more MLS note before we get to Connor O'Brien in the next segment. Steven Gerrard, I don't know if you've heard of him. He's from England. Now he's going to play in the U.S. Made his debut 45 minutes in an ICC friendly against Club America, in which Robbie Keane also scored a stunning goal. Simon, reaction after seeing him play with that squad for 45 minutes?
I thought he played really well. I thought he was more energetic than I thought he would be coming in. He had some fantastic passes. So I think he's already coming in at a level higher than at least what I expected. For a guy who you think is still in preseason mode, I thought he was all over the field. I think the 4-4-2 might work. I had my questions about it. My doubts, after watching this game against a pretty significant opponent in Club America, they I know they were missing several players, but they played really well as well in that first half. I thought he did well.
So Steven Gerrard will make his MLS debut on Friday night on Unimas against San Jose in a California Clásico. We don't expect him to play on Tuesday night in the U.S. Open Cup match.
But that's still TBD.
RSL, but that's to be decided. So, of course, tune into that one on YouTube. And let's go to the next segment. We're going to talk to Connor O'Brien, an American abroad, everything about living abroad, being an American, and fighting for your soccer career.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey, this is Garth Waterway, and you are listening to Extra Time Radio.
Bang! Caught you looking for the same thing. It's a new thing. Check out this I bring. Uh-oh, the roll below the level, because I'm living low next to the base.
Come on!
Turn up the radio.
back here on Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com in Sirius XM FC Channel 94. And earlier today, Simon Ariel Castillo and myself sat down with Connor O'Brien, who's back here in the U.S. He's a Yank abroad American export playing over in Europe. He's played in the top three divisions in Denmark, including a Champions League qualifier, as well as in the Austrian first division, a name a lot of you will recognize from different reports that have come out from Greg Seltzer and other people who cover American abroad. And he came into the studio to talk to us, now a free agent and back home here in New York City.
Yeah, I always love coming home. New York is a great city, and it's my home state. So I get to see my family. I get to see all my friends I grew up with. The weather's been nice so far, so I have no complaints.
What do you miss most when you think about coming home, or when you think about home?
Well, as a professional athlete, I'm probably not supposed to say the New York pizza, but definitely New York pizza, and I probably have to say my mother.
Wait, why can't you say pizza?
Well, professional athletes, you're not really supposed to be eating pizza all the time, but New York pizza is the best pizza, I think.
You're like a young man. You can deal with some gluten and dairy. It's all good.
It doesn't really affect my body at all, so I'm not complaining about
so
it.
So for those who don't know, Connor O'Brien is a member of the American Legion of Players playing in Europe, which is now a smaller contingent, really.
Yeah, I would say, you know, when I was growing up, the number was small, but then it reached a height, I guess, when I was in high school or my first year abroad, maybe it was getting up to around 200, 250 Americans abroad in the top two divisions, I guess, in each country. But now it's going back down a bit, and you don't see as many over there as you used to.
And what's happening is the guys are coming to the United States to play in MLS.
Yeah,
mostly,
I think a lot of them are getting offers to come home, and they want to come play in front of their friends and family. So, yeah, why not?
When you see this?
Yeah, it's tempting, but it has to be the right offer.
And over in Europe, is there camaraderie with other Americans that are over there? Is it something that you need maybe to help you get along? Do you just make friends with Americans wherever you're playing?
I think for me, in my experiences so far, I've met some really great American guys abroad. You know, I became friends with Parkhurst and Goodson and Chris Rolfe and, you know, some of these guys that play over. We kind of have a connection, you know, we have something in common. So even I know when I first went over to Austria, Terrence Boyd had just left and, you know, like retweeted something that I had tweeted out. So I think there's definitely a connection that we all share when we play abroad.
So it's a great time to have Connor O'Brien with us because you're 26, going on 27, and you're, as we mentioned, a free agent. Mm-hmm. So you have your choice of clubs now. Mm-hmm. So this is a big moment for you.
Yeah.
Do you feel the magnitude of the moment? Like, this step is a big one, right? Because if you're going to do a contract, it's typically you do, what, 3-4 year contract?
If you're lucky. In the game today, it's difficult to get something 3 or 4 years long unless you're young and you're really a proven talent already.
You're fairly young and you're proven.
Yeah, but you learn it. In 26, you know, you're right at the height of your career, I think. They say it's between 25 to 30, you're going to get your best years of football. So right now I'm 26 and I do feel the magnitude of it, but I'm not really nervous. I think the last 5 years I've shown what I can do abroad, and I've played over 100 games in the top level in Denmark and Austria. I've played over 150 games total in Europe, including a Champions League qualifier. So, you know, I have a lot of experience over there. I've shown what I can do, and I think someone out there will notice that.
So how do you go about this process? So what's it like? So you have
I have an agent. I have an agent. He's from Denmark. His name's Alan Back Jensen. And he works together with agents from other countries, and he has good relationships, and I have a good relationship with him. And we really see the game the same way. When I talk with him, he and I both know if I have a bad game or a good game or make a good or bad play. We both know right away. So he's the one handling most of it.
And when you say the right situation, the right fit, what are you looking for? What are the first things when you hear about an offer, you hear about a rumor that you look at? Is it coach? Is it style of play? Is it league? Is it years? Is it money?
I don't know what I would say is the first thing I look at, but it has to be a combination of everything. You know, I want to play for a club that has a good history or a good name, a club that wants to win games, a club that has a coach that sees the game the same way I do, a contract that's fitting for what I feel I deserve, a club that wants to, you know, play the same way I want to play. So it's really a combination of everything. And of course, if you can get a nice location or a nice city, that's a bonus. But, you know, I've also played for some clubs that are in the middle of nowhere, and I've played in clubs that are in like the center of Copenhagen. So you can look at it both ways. And that might be the last thing I'm concerned about. It's more about the football than where I'll be living.
Let's start with the club that's in the middle of nowhere. Sorry to cut you off, Ariel. Mm-hmm. you started in the Danish third division.
Yeah.
You were undrafted in MLS, by MLS in 2010.
Coming out of Bucknell.
No agent, and you go to the Danish third division. How did that even come about? Well, how do you find a club in the Danish third division?
Yeah, when I graduated from Bucknell in 2010, summer 2010, I had no contract in MLS. I had no real options to play here. So my college coach knew a guy living in Denmark who had a connection to get me a tryout in the second league in Denmark, which is called the Danish first division. And it's a big club historically. It's called Vejle, but they've fallen on some hard times where they can't get back up into the Superliga. And I went and tried out for them, just stayed with this guy I didn't even know for 2 weeks, trained with them, and I played really well. But at the end of the trial, they even said, you know, you did well, but we just don't know enough about you. We can't compare college soccer to what we have, and we can't take the risk on you right now, because they were trying desperately to get back up. So they're like, but we recommend you stay in Denmark and try and find a team you can play for so we can watch you. So this guy I was staying with just like went around and made a couple phone calls, and there was a team in the third league in Denmark looking for a midfielder. I went and played one game with them the next day, and immediately the coach said, we want to sign you, we want to take you. But the problem is they don't have enough money to really fund an international player in the third league in Denmark. There's a minimum salary requirement. They couldn't really reach things, so we had to find a way for me to be able to stay and play. So I had to live there as a student and go to a school. It was like a high school for sports. And, you know, I'm a Bucknell grad, and I won a national championship
you're going
before,
to high school.
And I had to go live at this high school and wake up 7 o'clock every morning and clean laundry and take classes and do all these things that I hated doing. And I had to leave the school at 3 o'clock every day to take a bus to training. I'd get to training an hour early. I wouldn't get back until 9 o'clock at night because I had to take the train home after.
And this is so that you can get a salary?
This was also like, no, I wasn't even getting paid at the time. They were just paying for me to be able to
live
there. And I agreed to do this for 6 months because I figured, okay, let's take a shot. You know, I wanted to take a shot at a career. And after 6 months, we were in first place. And I was starting to find my rhythm at the end. I was playing every minute the whole time, but I had scored like 4 goals in the last 7 games. So I was like, okay, I found it. I found what I need to do. I figured it out. So I went home for Christmas break, and I agreed to come back for the next 6 months. And I agreed to do it for the full year. And
you loved the high school so much.
I loved it, yeah.
Did you do the laundry the whole time?
Oh, I had to like clean the laundry room. I had to like mop the floors and stuff. It was a hard year. And still had to take all these classes and had scheduled like breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I'd get home at 9 o'clock from training every night, and a friend of mine would just like put a leftover plate in the fridge for me. I had to heat up.
And so at this point, you're an adult. I mean, how old were the other students?
There were a handful that were my age or even a little bit older, but they were anywhere from like, I'd say 17 to 21, and I was about 22 at the time.
I mean, I've got to ask, like, what was even going through your head at that point? You know, you're in high school again at age 22 so that you can play for free for a third division team in Denmark, and you're a kid from Long Island. What even drove you to even keep going?
I wanted to be a professional soccer player. I wanted to be the best I could be, really. So I figured my whole mindset this whole year was, if I play as well as I know I can play, somebody somewhere will see me and offer me something. And at the end of the year, we ended up winning promotion up to the second league, so the Danish first league. And I had scored 11 goals in my final 18 games. And I was really, you know, I was a big part of why we'd gone up. So then all of a sudden, this club wanted to keep me for the next year. And now they're like, okay, well, you don't have to go to that school anymore, but we'll give you like a small salary. I had another offer from another Danish first league team, but it still wasn't a good offer. And I had an offer for a tryout, a 2-day tryout with a Danish Superliga team. And I said, okay, I'm not going to take the contracts. I'll take the 2-day tryout. And I went down and it was with Sønderjyske. And I trained 2 days with them, played some of the best football of my career, I guess, at this point. And they said, okay, we want you to come back for 3 more days. So the first of the 3 days, I won the beep test. Then I had a normal day of training. And then we played a friendly match against Wolfsburg, who were coming off as the German champions at that time. And I played 86 minutes in the game. We won 2-0 against them. And within 5 minutes after the game, they were like, we're going to offer you a contract. Whoa. We're going to figure it out. And I still had no agent at the time, so I would have signed for a soda and an apartment. You know, I would have taken anything. But we agreed on a contract, and I signed for 18 months.
How do you even go through that process when you don't have an agent? And the language barrier. How did you even know what was going on?
Are the contracts in Danish?
Yeah, actually they are, but they made an English copy for me so I could like understand it. But I had to sign it in Danish. So it really wasn't that difficult for me, though, because in Denmark they learn English starting at such a young age, and anybody really under 40 can speak some English or good English. So that wasn't so difficult, but without an agent, I wouldn't recommend it to anybody because it wasn't very easy, and it was difficult for me to get where I am today. But after going through what I went through, I just wanted to play professionally, and this was my chance. So I couldn't really negotiate. I had no negotiating options.
Before we move on from the third division team, yeah. Give me the craziest story in that year of living in a high school. You were living inside the high school.
Yeah. It's not an American high school. It's very different from an American high school, but it was like, it translated. It's like a high school for kids who want to learn about like team building and sports.
It's like a secondary school.
Yeah. It's so difficult to compare. You have to, you know, go do your year yourself and we'll see. And then we'll compare.
Give me a crazy story though.
The craziest thing though is in the locker room, the coach, my first year there, the coach could speak no English.
Really?
So he would give a 30-minute speech and he's telling me like what to do in Danish, and I don't know any Danish at this point. And
you don't know Danish.
He knows I don't, but he's still speaking to me along with the team, and he's moving these pieces on the board and he's just making sound effects for me. he's like, Connor, and everybody in the team, everybody in the locker room is laughing, you know, because they all know how funny it is, and some of them can speak English, so they'll translate it for me after. But that by far is one of the craziest memories.
You've played in big cup games, you've played in big league games. What's the nerves in a big game compared to a 2-day tryout?
Yeah.
What's the comparison?
At the time, I don't think I felt real nervous in this two day tryout because I was coming off of, we had just won the promotion. We had to play two games, home and away promotion playoff matches, and we drew 2-2 away, and then we drew 0-0 at home. So we moved on because of away goals. And a week later, I had gotten this tryout. So I was still in top form, and I was playing. And I don't think I even really thought about it that much. I just went for it. And I didn't really even let the nerves get to me. And at this point in my career, like you said, you know, I've played in big cup games. I've played in big international games. I've played in so many games in my career that at this point, I don't really let the nerves affect me. The bigger the moment, the better I seem to play, I think.
But now, you told us it's the goals you scored that with that third division club that got you promotion.
I believe so.
But you're not a goal scorer.
Not anymore. I was, though. I mean, all growing up in club ball and in college. In college, I was top scorer in the league, the offensive MVP 2 years in a row. I was one of the final 15 for the Herman Trophy, all because of goals and assists.
Okay.
And, my senior year of college, I had, I think 11 goals and 9 assists or something like that.
But now you're a central midfielder. We were talking before the interview. Yeah. More possession-based.
Right.
You'll run all day.
Right.
Give me a player in MLS, and I know you follow it from a distance.
Yeah.
Is there a player in MLS you'd compare yourself to?
I have to get back to you on that one because I think there are so many talented players in MLS, and I think everyone is a little bit different in their own way.
Ned Grabovoi is a guy I think about when I think of the possession-based midfielder who just runs all day.
Right. It's not a bad comparison at all. I mean, he's a good player, and I do like to run all day, and I want to keep the ball. But I like to create, and I like to be involved in the offense. But when I made the jump to the Superliga, the captain of the team was playing offensive center mid, and that's where I'd played my whole career. So then I was like, okay, I have to adjust my game in order to get on the field. And I adjusted it and slid back a bit more to like a number 8 instead of a number 10.
Right.
And now I'd say number 8 is the position I like to play the most.
Kieran, now, we mentioned earlier you went from Denmark to Austria. What was the transition like in terms of changing league, another language that you're not that familiar with, a new set of coaches?
Because you had settled in Denmark. You were there for 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I ended up being there for 4 years, and I had played on 4 different clubs.
Why even move to another country at that point?
I still had a year left on my contract in Denmark, but I had an opportunity to go to Austria, and I knew I would be like the main focus of the team. They were going to like pretty much build around me, and I was going to play every minute, and the Austrian league is rated higher than the Danish league.
This is the first division in Austria.
Yeah, the Austrian Bundesliga.
The club Wiener Neustadt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just knew I would get 30 games this year. New eyes would be on me. I would get to branch out a little bit and see how I could adjust my game to to make myself better, and I would get more people watching. So it really wasn't too hard of a decision. But yeah, I was settled in Denmark, and I had a life there. I had an apartment there. I had a car there. I had everything there. So it was a difficult adjustment with the language and with new teammates and new coaches. But I've been in Europe 5 years now. I've played in 5 clubs. I've lived in 5 different cities. I've lived in about 8 different apartments, 2 different countries. So I've kind of figured out how to make the adjustments at this point.
How often do people, when you say, I'm moving here next year, do people from the U.S. or from your family say you're crazy? Or
no,
do you not even know what's going on with you?
They see what's going on, and they understand it, but they can't relate to it at all. But they love it because they have another place to come visit. So my parents have had a great time. They come over once a year, and they get to see a new place every year. My brother and sister can do the same thing, so it's no problem for them.
So when you went to Austria, you're talking about getting new eyes on you. What was sort of your end goal with that? I mean, where were you looking to get eventually?
You guys were fighting relegation,
yeah,
though, right?
So yeah. We were at the bottom of the league the whole year, and it was a difficult year. But I knew, like I said earlier, you know, I knew I would get 30 games. And playing 30 games in front of people that have never seen you before is always a good thing, I think, because, you know, you can get someone out of nowhere. You know, Austria's a bit more Central European than Denmark. Denmark's more Northern European. So I was getting people from Germany and people from Switzerland and people from all these other, France, you know, other countries were coming to watch. And that was cool. And that was a cool experience for me, I think.
What was sort of your ultimate goal, like your dream at that point?
Just to play. I just wanted to play.
So no specific league, no specific country?
No. I'm a free agent, and I'm open to all ideas and all countries. America, Denmark, Austria, I'd go back to any of them. So I'm really open to anything, and I just want to get the best experience out of my career.
What's the list right now? I know our own Greg Seltzer has filed a report saying Belgium, Austria, and Denmark. Austria and Denmark, obviously, mm-hmm. we've spoken about. Mm-hmm. And interest from the United States?
I think there's a little bit. You know, I think at this point I'm an American, so I think the MLS has to notice me a little bit. But I don't know how big the interest is, and I'm not sure really.
Because it's probably tough to have watched you. That's the other thing, right? I mean,
yeah, I mean live, but with technology today, there's all these websites. Or you can go on any scouting website, and you can watch 100 games from me. So, like I said, I've played over 100 games now in the top division in Europe.
And you've played top divisions. You mentioned Champions League qualifier. You've talked about national team at times. Have you heard from anyone in the U.S. camp?
No, I really haven't gotten any. Personally, I haven't gotten any phone calls. I haven't talked to anybody. My agent, I don't think, has really gotten many phone calls either. So it's something that I know I need to do more to prove I deserve to be there. But it's still a huge goal of mine.
You've been an underdog your whole life. It sounds your whole career.
Yeah.
In that, not recruited out of high school mm-hmm. by college. Mm-hmm. Not picked up by MLS. Mm-hmm. That must have been baffling too, because you were one of the Herman Trophy finalists. When does a Herman
semifinalist.
Trophy semifinalist?
Yeah.
When does a Herman Trophy semifinalist not make it?
Yeah, I was surprised. It was devastating for me at the time, because up until I was about 21 years old, I had never even imagined playing abroad. I always was like, MLS would be like my dream come true. I would love to play in the MLS, and I became a Herman Trophy semifinalist, and my college team had won our league championship, Patriot League championship, and we'd gone to the NCAA tournament 2 of my 4 years, and it was the first time in the school's history they'd ever done that. So, you know, I felt like I had made the most out of my college experience. And
I mean, not even drafted to try out. I mean, hold on. Did you get a tryout? You weren't drafted.
I wasn't drafted, but I ended up getting an email from Columbus Crew saying they had selected me in the
supplemental
draft. Okay. And I went and trained with them.
So you were selected.
But it wasn't real, you know. It was they selected me later when it was just
to make a pick.
Yeah, I think just to put a name on the paper. And I went and trained with them during my spring break, because I had heard some rumor about like you have to actually give them a chance order for them to like let you go and train with somebody else or something. So I said, okay, I can go do this, because then I wanted to go over to Europe in the summer. So I went and trained with them, and I had a nice time, and I enjoyed being with Columbus for these 2 weeks of my spring break, but it didn't seem like a very serious opportunity at the time. So, yeah, that happened.
How many times since that moment you don't get drafted till now have you thought that maybe playing professional soccer wasn't something you wanted to stick with?
Right.
From the time I wasn't drafted until I went to Denmark. So there was 6 months. Like, I went to Denmark around July, and the draft was in January. So those 6-7 months were – there was a lot of thought about it, because when I wasn't drafted, I went back to college to finish my degree. I had 6 months left to get my degree
in
economics. And now it's a blessing in disguise, really, that I wasn't drafted at the time, because I got to get my degree and I got this chance to go abroad, and I've made the most of my opportunities abroad, and maybe MLS can be an option now or later in my career at least. And I'll get that chance to play in front of my friends and family too. But at the time, I was devastated, and I was like, okay, I'm just going to finish my career, and everything happens for a reason. I really believe that. So I think me going back to get my degree, and that's when I kind of had, I said, okay, maybe professional soccer is not in the cards for me. And my whole first year abroad, I was just saying, I want to be there until someone notices me. And if someone didn't notice me at the end of that year, I probably would have come home and not been able to be where I am now. But I got the two-day trial, and it worked out from there.
Have you ever thought about what you would be doing now if you had come home?
My whole family, they're all lawyers, so I probably would have gone to law school or something like that. Yeah.
So you would be the MVP of the law firm league
probably,
every Tuesday night.
Probably.
But it worked out for you, and you ended up in Europe. And so now that you're back in the U.S., do you have a chance maybe to watch MLS a little bit more? Or when expansion teams are named, do you look at that city and say, could I live there?
Yeah, I'm always paying attention to what's going on in MLS. You know, even when I have like my off days over in Denmark and in Austria, I'm always watching MLS highlights every weekend. And I pay attention to all the leagues and players, because I grew up playing with some of the players or playing against some of the players, or, you know, some of the guys that were drafted when I was, and I look at them to see how they're doing, and, you know, kind of just pay attention to it all. And now New York City FC is the new team, and I'm a New Yorker, so that's interesting for me. But, yeah, I pay attention more than people expect, I think.
But it seems when you're talking about your options, you're still kind of hanging back and saying, maybe MLS, but not so much. So what's making you sort of, like, just hedge your bets about where you want
to
go?
I have to get an offer first, you know? Mm-hmm. I can't just say I'm going somewhere if there's no offer to
But you could say you'd like to go
down.
Somewhere.
I would like to go to a lot of places, though. Really. That is the truth. I mean, living in New York City, playing for a New York team would be amazing. Living in Copenhagen again, playing for a team in Copenhagen would be amazing. I just lived outside of Vienna. That was amazing. I've had great experiences so far. So there are really so many good clubs and good cities and good countries out there. And MLS and America and New York is one of them.
You experienced such a cultural immersion living in Europe as long as you have. I'm just curious what your favorite memory of that cultural immersion. What's the favorite thing you've taken away from 5 years living in Europe?
I mean, the lifestyle over there is so different especially from New York.
In what way?
In New York, everything is fast-paced. You know, right. Even when I'm walking on the street, I'm blowing by people and right. just, you know, getting where I need to go as fast as possible. In Denmark, the culture is very laid back, and it's all about quality of life. And, you know, everybody has universal health care, and they have a minimum salary that's like $20 an hour. So everyone gets a little, but the taxes are also like 60%. So,
really? So,
you know, everyone has money and they spend it right away, and they just enjoy their lives, and they're very laid back. Whereas New Yorkers are all about like saving for the future and getting where I need to be as fast as possible. So it's really two extremes. Mm. And it's a culture shock at first, but I enjoy both, actually.
We ask this question a lot when people in similar situations to you, but first of all, do you ever get approached, or if you're approached by someone in maybe a similar situation to you, what type of advice would you give in terms of going overseas and taking a risk like this, or for a player coming out of college who isn't sure if they're going to get drafted, of trying to extend their career or not? And what's maybe your one piece of advice, or how do you go about thinking about, okay, I want to try and play this long and see what happens?
Do you run into guys like that?
Well, I get emails a lot. Yeah. I get emails or like Facebook messages or something from guys that are just out of college, or maybe their junior, senior year of college, and they're looking to try and do kind of what I did. And I definitely don't recommend my story to other people living at that school and working the way I did. But the best way to go about it is to have an agent, I think, because I did it without an agent, and I don't recommend that. But getting trials with clubs is so difficult these days, and you really need to have an agent that can send out a resume or send out a video of you in order to get you get your foot in the door. And I've been in clubs where guys have been on trial with my club, and they've played fantastic, and they still get cut. So you need to be lucky when you're going over to Europe, and you need to play the best week of your career, and you need to be a little bit lucky as well. And that's why it's so difficult. And I'm sure it's just as difficult here in the MLS as well.
Your story rivals that of Jay Demerit, I would say, in terms of, again, how unlikely it was, mm-hmm. that voyage. I can't help but notice that some of your words, there's a little bit of European accent.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You get a lot of ribbing from your...
I get this all the time since I've been... Especially since I've been home this time because my uncle is from... His ancestry is from Germany. So he can speak German. Okay. My cousins can speak a little German. And I was living outside of Vienna, which is... They speak German in Austria. And he was saying, like, Austrians are really known for their... Like, they speak in rhythms like this. And he could hear it on me the first sentence I said hello to, when I said hello to him when I just came back this summer. And everybody I've met so far since I've been home this summer has mentioned my European accent now. So I guess after 5 years, you kind of pick it up a little bit. And I'm not happy about it because I liked my New York accent, but now it's a little bit New York, a little bit European, I guess.
I still hear Long Island. So
yeah,
don't worry.
Okay. Thank you. Long Island.
Well, we hope to see you here in the U.S. playing. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah. Best
Enjoy
of luck.
The rest
Thanks
of your vacation.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate
and, everyone loves your bag. So
yeah, it's a baller bag. So, I mean, it's
so we'll see if we can get some baller gear in here.
That would be
great.
Hold
on. If fans who are listening to this want to follow you on Twitter, you do have a Twitter account?
Yeah, ConorO'Brien22.
And we'll tweet that out after, and everyone can keep up to date on you through there.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Sounds great. Big decision coming up.
Thanks so much to Conor O'Brien for coming in and taking the time to talk to us. So interesting to hear these stories about guys who maybe don't get the opportunity here, and yet there's a whole world of opportunity out there for soccer players, but a lot of struggle along the way. As he said, follow him on Twitter at ConorO'Brien22. As all the news comes out about him, we'll tweet, of course, at him from our handle. Coming up next, we're going to talk some Gold Cup, a little bit about Jozy Altidore and the national anthem, and we're going to give away some Atlanta gear.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey guys, this is Justin Mann with the Columbus Crew, also with the Iraq national team, and you guys are listening to Extra Time Radio.
Simon, I see you working as hard as you can to not bang your head right now. You want to.
Very
so
good perception.
Bad.
It's like a little twitch.
So is that all no lyrics? Is that the whole thing? That's
I don't
that's
know.
That's an excellent start, but because I can't hear anymore.
It's a six-minute song. Oh, man. David Christensen sent that one in. Trying to bring back Metal Mondays used to be a thing before actually my time, and so clearly before your time, since you're about a week and a half into your experience on this show.
If it's a six-minute metal song, you know the vocals aren't going to kick in for another two minutes after an intro.
And I feel bad, but people have been telling me right when they want the songs to pick up, and it still hasn't caught
you know,
Simon.
Get him an Atlanta piece of Atlanta gear.
Yeah?
Yes.
Is David Christensen the winner?
Based just on that riff? It clearly moved you emotionally.
Yeah.
The riff worked. Now, I don't know much more about that specific song, but the riff worked.
This is now a minute and 50 seconds in. This is 3 minutes in. And this is 4:45 in.
Who are these people playing?
Symphony X. This is Of Sins and Shadows.
There you go. Highly technical metal group. Yep.
Yeah?
You
really?
Some nimble technical. Fingers.
Do you actually know that?
I do. I had a tattoo artist who loved to tattoo to Symphony X. True story. Symphony X and Buckethead.
He gets an Atlanta.
Yeah, because he got a
Make
great
sure
story
it's the
out
black,
of
it's the black Atlanta one.
Okay, and we're going to be giving another piece of Atlanta gear away in a little bit, but let's talk Gold Cup first because a lot happened this weekend. A lot of surprises in this tournament, a tournament in the group stage where you don't a lot of times see surprises. But first, unfortunately, Canada falling to Jamaica on a 92nd-minute goal. As
the Jamaicans will take exception with that comment.
Falling to
Canada,
Jamaica?
Canada unfortunately falling to Jamaica. Well, Jamaicans that listen to the show take exception.
So Jamaicans who listen to the show, feel free to contact us. Because Canadians definitely feel free to contact us, and they consistently do. They haven't scored yet, though, Simon, in this tournament. So now they're going home. They have this great opportunity to play in front of their home fans. El Salvador gets a draw against Costa Rica with also a 92nd-minute goal, by the way, equalizer in that one. So they're still alive if they can knock off Costa Rica to some extent. Do you give Canada hope?
Yes, because they're at home. You'd like to believe the Canadians will come out to support them. Costa Rica, I know our friend Eddie Eduardo thinks that they're world beaters, but they clearly are not, and they're showing it in this tournament. So in a...
How long have you been waiting to say that?
What? I mean, they're clearly a middling team.
Oh, my God.
Two draws.
I think we have to say that we're not at fault for any medical issue that Edmundo might be having right now while listening to this.
I mean, it's a peaceful country. They don't have an army, so I don't know if they have the warrior spirit necessarily. Oh. No, I'm kidding. I love my Tico. Sorry.
So Canada definitely has a chance. Costa Rica are not overpowering anyone. That's what I'm saying.
But for Canada, they need to score. They've proven they can play with two teams that
they
played.
The miss number two. To St. Ricketts.
Oh, you refuse to call the first one miss, but now you're adding to it.
If you're going to call the first one the miss, this is the miss number two.
Okay.
About 10 minutes in, to St. Ricketts one-on-one against the goalkeeper. He scores that. Obviously, the game changes. Very similar to what Kyle Larin faced.
And Jamaica now leading the group, looking very confident. In Group C then, on Sunday night, another surprise. Mexico beats Cuba 6-0, and then they go out and they draw Guatemala 0-0, and they were man up for a portion of this game. Ariel, are Mexico fans starting to worry?
You know, I think Mexico probably got comfortable after their, you know, their slaughter of Cuba. And if I were Mexico, I'd be a little worried, but not that worried because I put them forward on my bracket.
So you need them to go through.
To keep going.
Simon,
I wanted to do this before we did the show here.
This is really professional of you.
What happens if they finish second? Like, do they wind up on
the... No, they still wind up on the same side of their bracket.
Oh. Okay.
So their group doesn't cross over into the USA side. What could happen, though, is... And everyone thought Costa Rica would meet the U.S. in the semifinals, but it now looks like Costa Rica, if they don't get first place in their group, might be on the opposing side, and they'll have to meet Mexico in a quarter or semifinal situation, which is interesting because Mexico has struggled... Now, Honduras in the friendly before the Gold Cup in Guatemala with teams that sit back and play physical.
So what do you need in that case? You need some Gio Dos Santos. Whenever you have a team that does that, you need magic. Who on their team right now supplies the magic?
You don't think the lesser Dos Santos could do it?
No, he's more of the methodical, you know, just connect passes kind of guy. But they need Gio Dos Santos. He's been on the bench. I don't understand why.
And I think Herrera saying kind of it was his fault to not introduce Gio against Guatemala maybe a little bit earlier. USA will face Panama Monday night in their last group stage. We're not going to talk about that much because the show is not going to come out. But a good question.
The show is going to be out.
It's never coming out. But Simon brought up a good point, and I want to ask you, Ariel. Panama, of course, upset with what happened in World Cup qualifying, Graham Zusi knocking them off. How long do you hold on to that grudge if you're a Panama, either player, member of the FA or the whatever it is, Panama football, or a Panama fan?
Probably hold on to it forever, especially because this game, you know, doesn't matter too much. Right?
Not for the U.S., for Panama.
It's that sort of like, you know, existential level of sports. Why are we doing it?
Yeah.
No. You know when it goes away? When you can do the exact same thing, an eye for an eye.
Right.
Are you a vengeful type, Ariel?
I don't understand.
I am. Until you can exact the same punishment on the opposite person, you will not rest.
Oh, I think I practiced too much yoga for that kind of talk.
Man, Ariel.
Namaste.
See, two Mets fans sitting right here, and all we talk about and think about is revenge.
Revenge against who?
Revenge against who?
Who do you want revenge
for
against?
For me, personally, as a Mets fan, I'll take revenge against the Atlanta Braves any day of the week. Speaking of Atlanta, no, we're actually not going to go there. That would have been a perfect transition, though. But a little bit of news, I guess you could say, coming out about the USA on Monday. Jozy Altidore, for a while now, it's been recognized that he doesn't put his hand over his heart when he's standing out with the team for the national anthem. A lot of times it stands out because he's the only one not doing it. He hasn't really talked about it much, but we've all
kind of assumed it was because he's his Haitian roots.
I would never assume that.
Yeah,
I don't know. This is a country of immigrants. If we all didn't put our hands over our hearts, no one would ever do it.
And so I also don't know who we all are in that setting. So Simon has always assumed that.
I think we've done that on this show.
No, we've talked about it, but I don't think we've
said that. Now that you know news that you're about to enunciate, now you're saying it.
So he did an interview with Ivis Galarsep on goal.com, which we recommend for you to go read. And he said that I was raised as a Jehovah's Witness. My mom is a Jehovah's Witness. And there's just certain things we don't do. Birthdays, holidays, stuff like that. So not putting my hand on my heart has nothing to do with me being against the country or being any less American. I love my country. I'm very American. I love playing for the U.S., and I hope people understand that's why I don't do it. It was a new wrinkle to this, though, Ariel.
I just think it's silly that he needs to answer for that at all. I mean, we all kind of come in contact with Jehovah's Witnesses. I mean, I met some on the train yesterday. So I think we know that they're out there. They don't do birthdays. They don't do Christmas. And they don't pledge allegiance to someone over God or over Jesus. And I just don't think it's a big deal.
But the other thing is, I agree with you. It felt like people instantly went cynical. That right. Their assumption was, he's not doing it. Why am I mad at him for not doing it? Rather than, like you said, thinking he probably has a good reason. I mean, everyone operates in different ways. Everyone shows respect in different ways. And this is now, we now know part of his upbringing. Let us know what you think now that this new wrinkle's come out. Shoot us an email. Tweet at us at Extra Time Radio. We do have a couple of tweets. We put it out there about the Atlanta United logo. And guys, they were not positive on the whole. USA Soccer J, though, says, it looks like a slightly demonic Anaheim Angels logo. Darker red and black. Top of the A kind of has horns. And that's kind of...
I think that's beveling. It's not horns, right? Ooh. I'm not a font designer, but...
Send him the other Atlanta... Is it him or her? Send that person.
I don't know.
The merch. That person gets the
so
merch.
USA Soccer J, email us because Simon wants to send you more merchandise. You're just giving it away to people
Let's
that
give
you
it
don't,
to this person.
Don't agree with today.
I'm interested if they see a demonic representation in this logo. I'm interested to see what happens to their lives having this thing in their
USA Soccer J, email us. And if we send you something, you have to take a picture with it and show us that you are wearing it. One more tweet that I want to read. Patrick Ormsby, NYCFC Toronto. Is it a derby or a Farby? Now, Ariel has not been introduced yet to the Farby.
What do you think a Farby is?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot. I'm going to guess it's a derby where the teams are far away from
each other. Whoa!
Call it a wild guess.
A wild guess. Ariel, are you on board?
With calling it a Farby.
Do you like the idea
Darby?
Of having Farbies? Because MLS covers such a big country.
Right.
Unlike like a European league where everything's so close together.
Sure.
But you can have rivalries because you play each other so often. We've coined this for along with Jimmy Garcia and apparently Massive United, who we apologize if we took this from you. We didn't know that. But we're still figuring that one out.
What I don't get is semantically, what's the difference between a rivalry and a Farby? Because a derby, you know, implies some kind of geographical proximity. All right. So when you're talking about a Farby, that takes away the geographical proximity. So why is it not just your run-of-the-mill rivalry at that point?
I think a derby is another level up from a rivalry.
Okay. So a rivalry just kind of
rivalry is so generic. It's a little generic, I think.
But and Farby is serious.
There's menace in there. I mean, there is serious. Dislike.
By the way, you gave it away because you said when you said to her, "Do you think? What do you think of a Farby?"
Because you thought it was.
That's
too,
the way you said it.
You thought it was too dumb to hear "far" and "Farby" and figure out that one team is from a different country.
I think
and it's
he
kind
made,
of far
I think
away.
When you put the two next to each other, it becomes an extremely obvious, Simon. I think that's all we have for today. It was fun doing this with you guys. Andrew Reby will be back on Thursday, so I won't have to say Extra Time Radio at the beginning of the show.
What are you going to close this with? Go ahead. Let's see.
I don't really have anything set up. Thank you to Connor O'Brien. Also follow him on Twitter to see everything that's going on with him. Thank you to CJ Sapong. A really interesting interview. Profound interview. Ben the Research Bear came in. Ariel, thank you to you. Simon, I am so thankful to have your strong presence next to me as I attempted to host this show today. Have a good day, everyone. We'll be right back.